Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And it's a good job that there's no set schedule, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's been a while. It's been, what, like six weeks or something since the last podcast. But that doesn't mean that we've not been reading. It just means that I've been away on a work trip, which took... that was like four weeks away. Yeah. And then when I got back, Juliana was working hard and now we have time. Day off.
Yes.
Proper day off.
And we've done some reading.
Yes, and we've done some reading. So just to be caught up, there's like five books that I've read since then. People following along on goodreads.com, who are my friends, have obviously seen this. The Time Machine, Roadside Picnic, Starship Troopers. What's this other last book that I just almost finished now? Oh, Heavy Time, Company Wars, number 4 by CJ Cherry. And but there's a book that in the time that I read those five, Juliana finished this one. Well, at the time I read those four, Juliana finished this one.
Well, yes. And since then, I've started some others.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying, in the same span of time, the book that we want to talk about is The Sparrow by Mary Doria. Is it Mary? I should have just brought this up here as well. Ah, see what happened there? It's my mouse is broken, so random pages open up because it thinks I'm doing... Yes, so Mary Doria Russell wrote The Sparrow, and this was published in 1996.
Yes.
And the reason why we read this or reread this is because we did, for 2 episodes ago, which was like 8 weeks ago, whatever, we did a special episode, and then we even recorded that even earlier, didn't we?
Yeah.
So we did a special episode, which was the SFBRP Must Reads science fiction list. And so the introduction is that is, which books are the best examples of science fiction available to read today? Which books are best for those wanting a deeper dive into science fiction? Which old books stand the test of time, and which new books will we still be thinking about in decades to come? So that's what this list is. The original thing was like, what's a great way to get into science fiction? But thinking about it a bit more, that's not true, because again, you shouldn't give some of these books to people just getting into science fiction.
Absolutely.
Give them something like The Expanse or, you know, or whatever, you know, like whatever kind of science fiction book, just to get them reading stuff with spaceships in or whatever, or robots or whatever.
Yep.
And then if they want a deeper dive, then give them some of these, because some of these you don't want to get straight into.
A bit more spicy.
Yeah. Like if you're like, hey, what should I read? It's sort of like, well, yeah, Greg Egan has got this book, Diaspora. It's like, whoa, no, that's science fiction in the hard mode. So yes, it's for people who want to get deeper into science fiction rather than people who are immediately starting out with science fiction. I mean, not all of them. But the deeper dive can be like tougher subjects or more difficult things or more difficult writing, or just go back in, you know, go back through the history of science fiction and read stuff that hasn't been covered.
I also like it that you sorted the list not by, I don't know, publication date or something, but you gave it a little subgenre headline.
Yeah, subgenre headline.
And so that means that people can look through that and select the ones that they fit in their wheelhouse.
Yes, and this book, which is The Sparrow, is Religious Order on Another Planet. The other book in this little section is Anathem by Neal Stephenson. And if I'd have read Speaker for the Dead, which is the follow-up to Ender's Game, that's also feels like this similar kind of thing. You know, Religious Order on Another Planet. But that's not on the list. Maybe it should be. Maybe I should add that to the list, but I'm just saying it's that kind of thing.
Read it again. When did you read last?
A long time ago. I could probably look it up here. Speaker for the Dead, I last read it in 2014.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
Quite a long time ago.
10 years.
Weirdly, I think of those books, there's like 4 books in that first Ender series.
Yeah.
I think the first book that I read of any of those was the Xenocide book, which is the 4th book in the series. And then I went back and read this one. I think I'd already read Ender's Game, but I didn't realize that these other books were like, you know, there's other books in the middle. Anyway, the reason we reread this is because, well, I said that over this work trip, I'm going to reread some books which maybe should be on the list or shouldn't be on the list, you know, just to check and just to, you know, as a way to experience some books which I've given high ratings to and I think that are like classics or must reads, let me put it that way. I reread The Forever War, which was what we did on the last episode, and decided, nope, this isn't going in because it's very dated.
Yeah.
It's been done better before and since.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's difficult to recommend because there isn't a definitive version.
Yeah.
There was like, you know, there was a fix-up novel and then another edit, and then they put in more material and put in these. And I was like,
before you read it, you actually have to do research. Yeah, which of the books you should or shouldn't read.
Anyway, so we both reread Mary Doria Russell's The Sparrow. Now, there are, when I heard about this book before, there was mentioned that, like, someone said, oh, spoilers for the end or something like that, or, you know, avoid spoilers. So I actually, when I read this book, I didn't understand what people thought were spoilers.
Yeah.
But just so you know, there are some twists and turns at the end. Not everything that you think is going to happen at the start is going to happen at the end. So again, just in this discussion, I still recommend this book, even on my second time through, I still highly recommend it. So I'm not going to work too hard to avoid spoilers here, but it is... I think the main spoiler is that you think you're getting one thing, one kind of book, and by the end there's kind of another kind of book happening, which we'll discuss later on in the podcast. Anyway, what do you want to say as a framing device for this?
No, because you said it's a reread. I have never read this book
before.
Oh,
this is your first time?
This is my first time reading this book. Yeah. I have not read this before. So for you, it's a reread.
Yeah.
For me, it was a new book.
Well, let's talk about it from you reading it as a new book, and then we can... Yeah. Yes, I read and reviewed this January 30th. I posted the podcast in 2016, January 2016. So what, that's like more than 8 years since I've read this. That was the first time I'd read it that time.
Yeah.
So this is only my second time through. So yes, let's talk Juliana's first time reading it. But just to say, it's about, like I say, religious order on another planet in the future. The Arecibo radio telescope picks up a signal from Alpha Centauri. And the Jesuits seem to be the ones who work out, hey, we can just go now. And they head over there in a mining ship over to Alpha Centauri and do like a kind of anthropological, you know, scientific mission kind of thing. And stuff happens, stuff goes down. But that's the kind of thing. So if you want to read literally Jesuits in space, a Jesuit mission to another planet, this is a book which I would, again, recommend. It's not for everyone, but I think it's good enough that I would recommend it to anyone.
Okay. This is already, this introduction is kind of already my first hook up on how I started reading this book.
Oh, you
and
didn't
how
know
I
it was that.
Experienced it, and I thought, what is, why, what? No. So, okay, I had some quite a journey with this book.
Wait a second, when you're saying a hookup, you mean like you're tripping up
Jesuit
on this?
Jesuit in space.
And
you know, all the space story and them going on a planet and that, all this kind of stuff. And that is what I came into reading the book. And I'm not saying I'm disappointed by the book. I felt more like, wait a second, what is going on here? When does this stuff start?
All right.
And where is it?
Again,
where is it?
So here's the thing. When you actually... Oh, not my microphone. When you actually get into this and start reading it, yes, there is like this frame story or this. It's going backwards and forwards in time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that happens at the Vatican and then up to Napoli and stuff with a guy who comes back. I mean, this is not spoilers. This is all like right in the very like opening section, like the very introduction.
Yeah.
It's like, only one person came back from Rakat, which is this planet. And... he's being held. He's not very well. He's, you know, really, really bad health. And he's being held by the Jesuits in the Vatican.
Yeah.
And then it's about his recovery. And there's an inquiry, not an inquest. Very specifically, this isn't an inquest. It's an inquiry into what happened. And, you know, let's go through it step by step. So in him, Santos, Father Santos, Emilio Santos, him retelling his story, it kind of goes backwards and forwards in time as well. But yeah, in the second read through, that's not the bit that you remember, but that is actually the biggest part of the book. When you actually think about it, and this is what I said, that you think you're getting one thing, but actually you're getting another.
Yeah.
You think, oh, we're getting a mission to another planet, but really it's a character study about somebody who's got post-traumatic stress disorder and a crisis of faith.
Yes.
That is actually what the book is about.
And two-thirds of the book is mainly we get to see a person highly traumatized and like after lots of experiences that he can't even fathom, he can't even talk or think about it without his body having physical reactions to these things. So it starts off with them finding the signal and getting to know it. What I really appreciated at the beginning was this sort of sentiment that, oh, there's the signal, somebody found it, and the way that it was approached wasn't then, oh, it's the governments who then put together the money and the missions. It's the this religious order that just has the resources and can just do it.
Yeah, they kind of do it without anybody knowing about it. And they're like, wait, the Jesuits, we were gonna send it. Yeah, like
they're already there.
So here's the thing. Yeah. So that's half of what I'm saying, that you think you're getting this one book, but then you're actually getting another book. And the big surprise for me, which affected me when I was, well, I was going to say, let's talk about this later in the podcast, but of course now this is what we're leading with, actually sort of like the experience of reading the book for the first time. You had it that you were expecting one book, which is Jesuits in Space, and actually it's a character study about somebody who's been to space and is now back again. Mm-hmm. And like what went wrong on the mission is kind of less important to the book than how he responded to it and how he's doing now once he's back on Earth.
Yeah.
And the other thing that what you think you're getting is a space adventure, or maybe, you know, first contact. But actually, by the end, what you're getting is like pretty it's a horror book. It's a horrific book.
Oh yeah.
Like so, and the sense of dread there is perfectly. So here's how I realized what was happening here. The first time I read this book, didn't know what I was getting in for.
Yeah.
And again, not going to get into any of the detail, like the solid details of what's happening. But it's all very light, but that you know that he's the only one who gets back alive. And it's very affecting, like the emotional journey that it takes you on. And I was really affected by that the first time I read it.
Yeah,
like that.
Me too.
Let's talk about that in a second. The second time I read it, I was like, well, I know what's going to happen. I know all the details. I've been on this emotional journey. And I was kind of like, well, it won't work on me a second time, will it? It can't work on me a second. You know what? It did work on me. Not to the same extent, because again, it didn't have that shock value, but it still had the effectiveness.
Yeah.
Because so much of the start of the book, well, the way that I was like, I had it shaped in my head was that it wasn't a ramp up of tension and horror and all this other kind of stuff in a kind of linear line. Mm-hmm. So I'm just starting here, going at 45 degrees.
Yeah.
What it's doing, it kind of goes up on this exponential curve, you know, so it starts off slow, And it's one of those things that nobody can ever, you know, you can never predict what's going to happen in 1 year's time, and it's not going to be as impressive as you think, but nobody can predict what the world is going to be like in 10 years' time, because 10 years' time, you know, that's many cycles of technology, many cycles of culture, many cycles of language, like how many new words are there now and phrases and things that weren't 10 years, nobody can predict that there's going to be a pandemic or whatever, you know. However the world is going to change, humans can't do that. We're very good at predicting what the world is going to be like in 1 year's time, and we always underestimate how much the world is going to change in 1 year's time, but we always underestimate what's going to happen in 10 years' time, you know, because...
Oh, so you mean we overestimate what happens in 1 year?
Yeah, we think, technology is going to go like this. And it's like, no, that's probably going to take seven... Like, what you think is going to be... Because humans, we only work on, like, straight line upward... Like, we're not very good at these exponential curves. Like, we you know, if something's doubles every time. So what I realize this book is doing, it's setting up a vibe at the start of the book, which is like really, really strong, light-hearted stuff. Like the first two-thirds of this book is mostly about a group of people who are getting on... I'm talking about the main story, you know, the mission to the other planet. Two-thirds of it is like, hey, everyone here is getting along great.
Yeah.
They're quipping with each other. Like, there's a there's like almost a laugh track to this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, every time they're saying it, then this person said this, and then they all laughed. And because there's a group of, like, six, like first of all, like, three people, then five, then six, and it gets up to, like, eight people or whatever it is. And they're all getting on great, and their personality, and it's really nice to spend time with this.
Yeah.
And this is the classic, you know, horror story, like horror movie kind of thing, is that you start off with a group of characters, and the way that you're
like in Final Destination, like is the best way of doing
the reason why you care when one of them dies is because you spent a lot of time with them and they get on so well, and they care for each other and like each other and, you know, love each other. You know, you can be a husband and wife, so if one of those dies, it means this. Or you can be, you know, like in this book, there's like a bit of a love triangle there, and there's a will they won't they kind of thing. And so when they, you know, when all that stuff happens, there is, you know, but you need that ramping up of tension, because it can't just be like, hey, everyone's getting on with each other, and suddenly they start being killed. It's like, no, we needed that bit, you know, in the movies, you're like, you need to have like the ominous stuff, that somebody that you don't care about is killed by the serial killer. So then when the serial killer starts picking off your guys, or you need the, you know, some kind of whatever stuff, yeah, at the start, you know, the foreshadowing,
need to be led towards it.
Yeah, you need to be led towards it. And I was like, and that's what I was kind of judging this book by this time around. And I was like, and by the time you get to the end, it was ramping up so much. I was like, oh, it worked. Even the second time through, the formula of, you know, like a slasher movie where people are going to be picked off one by one, ramping up of tension, but also that like front loading it with like laughing people, like young people going to a cabin or something. You're like, you've got to fall in love with these people. You've got to really enjoy them at the start. Mm. I actually found it heavy handed, but here's the thing. Heavy handed still works if you're pulling at people's heartstrings and prodding people's emotions and making people smile and making them go like care about a relationship, or care about a will they, won't they, or care about a love triangle, or care about a mission, or all of that kind of stuff. This book does that like really well, to the point of being heavy-handed.
I want to put a late disclaimer here now. This book is not for the faint-hearted.
It's not for the faint-hearted,
because it gets horrifying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's as much a horror as a science fiction book.
However, I think this is done in such a clever way, which I've never read in a book before. There are things that I think, or I would have wished, been gone others, and I'm going to come to these points. But the way that this is done, with also jumping backwards and forwards in time, I have read, of course, I've read many books that do this. But the way it is done here is just so incredibly artistic in the way that it tells backstories of people, and then it goes forward in time to show what they are doing and how they're coming together, and then goes back again to other things that happened in the past. And it's like this constant jumping backwards and forwards.
Yeah, it's very well structured.
And the way it ramps up with, in the middle, I had this, I'm almost like shouted out loud, why didn't they just believe him?
Yeah.
And then towards the end, it's just like, yes, I was right, but then I didn't want to be right.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's got all of the horror tropes in it. Like, it's full of all the science fiction tropes. And I actually think it's like, I wouldn't say it's weak as science fiction, because it does rely on you just going, the Jesuits are gonna, like, the technology to go to another planet around another solar system has obviously exists, you know, because it's like, I wouldn't say off the shelf technology, but like, it's technology that anybody with that vision could have put together to go to another planet, but they just happen to have been the first people to go there.
Yes.
So in a way, again, this is me critiquing some of the science fiction elements, I think it would have been better if it wasn't a star around Alpha Centauri, which would be the first place that you'd go to, because it's the nearest place. You know what I mean?
Right.
So in my head, my headcanon on this would be that this is not in Alpha Centauri, but there'd been like other places that had already been visited by humans. So it wasn't like randomly some like eight Jesuits or the Jesuits sell some expensive paintings or whatever they do, or some artwork and fund it, because that feels a bit too easy.
Yeah.
So I'd have preferred it if it was like known off the shelf technology, but they kind of just did a mission without anybody, you know.
They just did the mission
a year earlier than anybody else, rather than the first who'd ever left the solar system.
Yes. This is one of the things that I think you come across this book and there are few too many of, oh, this is convenient.
No, it literally says it's the will of God.
Yes.
It's a book about a religious order. And they're like, well, it's all convenient. It's like, no, it isn't convenient.
Yeah.
God is leading us here. So you've got to approach the book in the way that the characters in the book do so, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. What is it?
Hanging a lampshade on it, isn't it? So
yeah. What I did appreciate at the beginning was all this, the way it was set up, the way that they got the signal and what the signal was. And being a musician, I thought it was delightful for me that it was music.
Yeah.
And for me, that was, and then they're going to go and then they're going to, you know, explore and with the music, and they're going to music with the aliens and whatever. There's a huge bit at the beginning, especially, where it is very much about the signal and what kind of signal it is, and who they then get together in the group. Like, they do this kind, the typical kind of, we need to get this kind of person, this kind of person, this kind of person. So they get together, the eight people, whatever, how many it is. And
The ex-Navy pilot, the ex musical guy.
And biologists and a doctor and, and you have all the different kind of people. And I also appreciated the beginning of when they explored the job of the woman. I forgot her name now, weirdly. Where she's like this AI programming training person, expert. And just that idea in what, in 1995 or 6 or whatever, this must have been an amazing exploration.
I've got some notes about that as well.
So there are some really, really good, interesting themes and ideas in here, apart from, of course, the religious, ethical, moral, and spiritual things in this book. Everything is very heavy-handed in that direction.
But that's the thing. It weirdly, this is a book that works on me, not despite it being heavy-handed, because it just leans into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just, like, at every point, they're like, all right, what are the emotions here? Let's heighten them and let's bring it up, bring more into it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, again, the book that you think you're getting is one thing. It's not that, it's another thing, but actually it's another thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
There's what you're getting. Of...
Jesuits in space, actually post-traumatic stress, actually, and losing faith. And why? It's because horror happens and that's actually what we've been ramping up to.
Yes.
And we've been dropping these hints in all the way about what the horror is and what's actually going to happen.
Yeah.
Even though pretty much they explain it like right near the start and you're like, oh.
Oh yeah, it's quite in the middle where it's, at the beginning. Yeah. And what I've appreciated about this book as well was the approach of the, I always like it when people are going to a different planet and encounter different life forms and talk about the aliens and experience the aliens. And I thought that was done in some ways really well and in some others really, really... some of it felt very amateurish.
They are amateurs. They kind of even reference it. Again, it's like this hanging lampshade on it. So I'm like, why are these people? It's like, but the Jesuits always went off to, there's a whole thing about them, going over, and it mentions them going over to, like, talk to the, like, Native American nations or tribes or whatever it is in North America. And, you get the only people, like, the only Westerners who are allowed into Japan were the Jesuits or whatever like that. You know, they're kind of known for being, like, going off and doing that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And so it's like, this is actually just part of what we do.
Yes. But that doesn't mean that they are not...
That's what's so frustrating about it.
Right.
So annoying. Yes. I'm like, guys, do it better. So...
One more thing.
Oh, yes, go through it, yeah.
Because recently, we've read some Ursula K. Le Guin, and then I've read this book.
Oh, this is so bad compared to Ursula K. Le Guin in terms of anthropology.
Oh my God. And if you have any knowledge and any had in the past any contact with proper anthropologistic...
Well, Mary Dora Russell is, like, a paleoanthropology. That's what she has a PhD in paleoanthropology.
I know, but not living anthropology. And Adrian Tchaikovsky's book, with the elder race.
Yeah.
And then I have read this book where it was about the, what was it called? This... where it was the birds and they had the feathers with the different... I forgot the.
It was the book that you have to say a different
two
way
different
each
spellings.
Time.
Yeah,
yeah. It'll come to me. Come to us as well.
That one. So there, in the past, I've read lots of books that are about going to a different place and then mainly observing, trying to insert yourself as little as possible into the new place. And this is then done. This is like, okay, then amateurs who have no idea about this just go and just trample around everywhere.
Here's the thing. If the if the people that you're reading about, I can't read it, but it's, can't remember that, but the name of that book. Yeah, but it was like the book.
I had the cover in my head.
Yeah, and it was The Rustling of the Feathers? So here's the thing. In all these books, it's sort of like, we don't quite understand. And then this key bit of information, it's like, now we do remember. It's the scent of them. This is some that's been done over and over here.
Yes.
In this book, that doesn't really happen so much, which again is kind of felt like, I thought what was going to be the key piece of information. And there is a key piece of information, which is about the two different species that are there together. And that does do all the explanation. information.
Yeah.
But I kind of almost feel like, you know, that isn't what Mary Doria Russell is concentrating on, yeah. Which then makes it feel like I'm being a bit shortchanged, because I even made a note here. Once you actually get into that, like, exponential curve, the exponential curve doesn't just happen about the ramping of attention. It also goes through the story, like, for me, this read-through, too quickly.
Yeah.
Because I remember this love triangle that was going on, and it's all, like, building up. And then it's sort of like, it was just wrapped up. I made a note. It was wrapped up with some fast-forwarded, skip-through-the-year narrative. And it's Sophia settled, you know, and whatever it is. And I was like, it just happens. But it happens in, like, you know, fast forward exposition rather than in moments and conversation. Everything so far has been in like descriptions of action, descriptions of conversations, dialogue. And then it's sort of like, and then this happened, you know, and then then the world building at that point also fast forward, sort of like, and they discovered this, they discovered. And I was like, why are we now on list based info dumps is what I made a note of.
Yes.
I think it's just because, like I made a note as well, three quarters through and now we get the backstory of some characters in Naples. And I'm like, why is it now, three quarters of the way through, a side character in Naples is having his backstory told? And it's because, it's important. You know, it's kind of important for what's happening, going to happen. But I was like, why aren't we spending more time on this other planet? And that's why I think I felt a little bit shortchanged this time, because what I remembered the book being around, a lot of the book being about, is in info dumps and retellings or whatever near the end. So that the climactic, like the real climax of the action of what happens on Rakat, we kind of be told that in, like, fast forwarding through up until that point, and then something happens and some people go over and then something else is discovered, and then that's kind of filled in not much detail, and then it switches back to a very long chapter back in Naples where Emilio Santos, the father Emilio Santos, is then recounts it from his point of view of someone who's remembering it back. Yeah. And I was like, yes, that is effective in terms of the storytelling and the horror, because now we're getting, you know, his firsthand experience of it told later. But in my head, again, my memory of everything that was happening, it felt like that was, like, the main part. And of course it does, because that's the bits that you remember.
Yes.
In all good fiction, effective manipulative fiction, two-thirds of it is a setup, and then what you actually remember is just that last third or last quarter where all the action happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're watching Titanic, it's a two-hour movie of two kids falling in love and all the, you know, social dynamics there, and an hour of shipwreck at the end. And we all forget that there's, I mean, I've never seen it more than once, but, like,
I've never seen this movie.
Well, here's the thing. It's a very effective movie.
And we all know the outcome.
Because of the setting. Yeah, we all know the outcome. And it's very effective because that build-up to the action is actually the biggest thing. Of course, the action at the end is also very good. But it's one of those things that this book does really well. So on my second, like, so now if I was to watch Titanic again, I'd be like, come on, get through 2 hours. When is that iceberg going to hit? And the iceberg hits, like, literally, like, you know, these, like, in the 2 hour mark of a 3 hour movie or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's what we have here. Like, what works is, you know, is emotional. I don't want to say manipulation. I'm just saying effective storytelling.
Yeah.
Which is based on emotional reactions rather than intellectual. Because you can't read this book with an intellectual mindset. You have to read this book with an emotional / spiritual mindset rather than an intellectual one.
Yes.
If you want intellectual science fiction, Greg Egan is right there for you. He'll give you a math story anytime that you want.
But, yes.
And if you want a science one, but, you know, there's other people like an Adrian Tchaikovsky who can do a science emotional one. But this isn't a science emotional one. This is a spiritual character emotional one.
Yes. This is one of those examples. You know, when you have a graph, and we just talked about how the graph is in this book, in The Sparrow, is exponential.
Yeah.
However, then in this, my reading experience was then, you start zooming into the graph, and it's not a straight line.
No.
It goes, like,
at every
forward, and you're being pushed back against your head against the
and it's backloaded
so much. And then it comes to a screeching halt, and you think, What happened now? Why is it so abrupt? Like there's some bits that are like just chopped.
Yeah.
Chop.
And skip, and then...
Skip, and then push together. Like exactly most, like two-thirds, you get the backstory and all the things.
Yeah,
and
it's like really flowing.
You're flowing. And then you get onto the planet and hear the story when they're actually telling the story of the planet. And it is like... Chop. And then you have these eight people and then it goes one after the other. Chop.
No, I wouldn't say
that. I felt.
Yeah, it's,
I
think there's a little bit of spoiler territory, which we can discuss that afterwards, the podcast, because I don't want to talk about, like, I'll talk to you about, like, who dies. But I already have said it's horror, so, and only one person gets back from the planet. So I'm not giving anything away that some people don't get. But that's an issue that I'd like to talk in depth to you, but I don't think it's part for the podcast.
Okay,
here.
Anyway, so I was really excited about this musical theme.
I'm very sorry about your disappointing of the musical theme. I like how it's resolved, though. I like how the music stuff is resolved, which is really good. But again, we're getting into what's happening kind of stuff.
So there are like things that I was very, very emotionally shaken around. Like I felt a bit like in a tumble dryer.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're getting the same experience of the people who went to the planet. Like they didn't have a satisfying answers to all their questions and things. So So here we go. You're saying talking about the future. I made some notes here. This was written in 1990s, published in 1996.
Yeah.
So Sophia works as an AI consultant that she helps trains AIs, artificial intelligences, with the help of other people who are experts to then replace their job. And I'm like, oh, this feels very 2023, 2024 kind of thing with, like, you know, training AIs to replace people. And they're called vultures, the AI vultures.
Yes.
That they come in. It's like vulture capitalism, isn't it? Or no, vulture. Yeah, whatever it is where you...
In German, they're like the crickets that swarming in, like
okay. So vulture is where you, like, vulture capitalism is where I think where you buy up a company, strip it for parts, sell it for parts, and so you're not actually wanting to carry something or anyway.
No.
Vulture stuff, and that was, so that feels quite topical, and that part of the book is set in 2019.
Yes.
Also in 2019, Arecibo radio telescope.
Yeah.
Which, and I was like, oh, that's topical as well, because I looked it up. That collapsed in December 1st, 2020.
Yeah.
So I thought that was quite a funny thing as well. There's a mention of an astronomer with a bad shirt, or an astronomer with an inappropriate shirt. I think that was it. And I was like, oh, that reminds me of, was it the Huygens or the Cassini kind of mission? And there was one of the astronomers was wearing a shirt with like naked women on it.
Oh, really?
Do you
no,
remember
I don't
that?
Know
oh,
that
anyway,
one.
I just thought that was a thing.
I should look into that one.
One second. Astronomer with inappropriate shirt. Let's have a quick look here. Okay, a shirt storm. Oh, so this is in 2017. So this is even after the last time I read it. So it was the... Rosetta. Okay, so not Cassini.
Yeah, one of those missions.
The Rosetta project. This is the shirt. So he was on a live stream or the ESA news stream. And he was...
And he decided to put on this shirt.
Well, I think he said his girlfriend gave it to him as a present. And he was like, oh, I'll wear the shirt that my girlfriend gave me.
Oh, it's like a hoax present.
I don't know.
Okay.
And then,
but in a live stream, you can't explain yourself.
And then he actually talked, I'd forgotten about this. He talks about the difficulty of the Rosetta mission, saying, she's sexy, but I never said she was easy. And I was like, oh, great, man. Even in 2017, you're like, maybe not the right language or the right shirt. Again, these days, he'd be 2024 or 2023, even before that, like, you know, like the way that he'd be cancelled. This was even before people were talking about cancel culture, but he'd have been cancelled way earlier than that. What is it? Milkshake ducked. What is the thing? Anyway,
I don't know.
Either way.
Anyway, somebody should have told him that it's not appropriate.
Yes.
I think this is how it should be. No, nothing about cancelling. Somebody should have told him, hey, this might not be a good idea.
No reason. I'm just saying now he would be extra cancelled, because now it's something that you have to know about already. Another thing that I mentioned, the other thing that I did was that the end of this book, because of there's a... What let me put it this way. What happens to Emilio Santos near the end of the book? Mm-hmm. This was written in the 1990s, and it's pretty much a book about sexual assault involving Catholic priests.
Yeah.
And this is my main hang-up about this book now.
Mm-hmm.
Not my main hang-up, but when I was rereading it, I was like, oh, beforehand, like the first time as I was reading it, what was happening at the end of this book, I thought was one thing, and then this happens and it was very effective. Mm-hmm. Because the worst possible thing that could happen to a Catholic priest, just to say, could happen to a Catholic priest, happens. But there's lots of other bad stuff that happens, which I'm like, oh, why did it hinge on that thing? Mm-hmm. If you know what I mean. And at the time in the 90s, it was known that, especially in Ireland, Catholic priests were buggering children.
Yeah.
Boys. Sinead O'Connor said, what was it, you know, had the t-shirt on, no, ripped up a picture of the Pope.
Yeah.
On live TV, was it Saturday Night Live or something?
Yeah.
Say who's the real enemy, ripped up the picture of the Pope, saying covering up sexual assault in Ireland, you know. It was known back then.
Yeah. And I think it's even mentioned in this book that they know that that's happened.
It's not covered in this book. No, okay. What's covered in this book is that they say this guy, this priest is a problem, so they have to move him around so he doesn't sleep with too many women. It's the mentions there is purely in the other direction, for not Emilio, one of the other guys, one of the other priests who go on the mission. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into it. I'm just saying that this book is hit me slightly different this time because I knew what was coming.
Yes.
I was a little bit more outside the framing of the main character.
Observing it.
Yeah, I was a little bit more in these situations, thinking about what, you know, Luke now knows about this situation in the 1990s or whatever, rather than from the inside. So, yes, spoiler warning, trigger warning, maybe for people going into this.
It's a bit late now, you already mentioned it.
It is a bit late, but here's the thing. I don't believe in trigger warnings. So it's not that I don't believe in trigger warnings. I've never found a trigger warning helpful for me, and I've never felt comfortable me deciding what other people should or shouldn't be triggered by, if you know what I mean. Like the one time, you know what I said before, I read that book, what was it called? The one with some Indian women who go into space or something like that. I can't remember.
No recollection of any of this, what you're now saying.
It was... Anyway, they said spoiler warnings for, you know, this and that, and spoiler warnings for this and that. And nobody had a spoiler warning for a controlling husband forcing his wife not to have an abortion.
Like spoiler warning or trigger warning?
No, sorry, trigger warning. They're like trigger warning discussions of abortion. And I was like, trigger warnings, discussions of manipulative religious people using religious faith to force women not to have abortions, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And I was really strongly triggered in the opposite direction of what everybody else would put trigger warnings on for, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I never feel good talking about trigger warnings for what triggers me or doesn't trigger me and assuming that other people would be triggered in the same way, if you know what I mean.
Yes. But I do think that we warned ahead of the bit in the podcast.
No, but here's
that
the thing. And again, I need to go back on this. If we completely were open about everything that was happening here and what the key, I mean, we talked about it quite a lot, but obliquely. But if we were like, I think obliquely, if like we just said exactly what we laid it out, we'd be taking away a lot of the emotional experience that you could have reading
absolutely.
This. And I think the people who would have this is me projecting onto other people, that I don't know what I would say which would spoil this, or someone who should be reading this and will get more out of it because of their history with something like this. Again, it's difficult for me, so I don't know. So I'm just leaving up.
I observed something on myself, on my own emotional reaction reading this book, is that, you know, in fiction, and now I'm abstracting a little bit from this book, the amount of rape that happens to women in fiction is uncountable.
Yeah.
Like, really. Like, in all kinds of fiction.
It's just part of fiction. If you have a bad
story to tell, a dramatic or traumatic story to tell, you will encounter women being raped or assaulted in any sorts of way. And this book showed to me how my emotional reaction changed, or how my empathy was different to the story here, just because I rarely get to know this, and I felt different because it wasn't the usual,
right? Yeah,
you know, I felt a little bit, I'm not saying numbed, but from like reading about women we know this, okay, this happens, okay, this is normal, whatever. And so there is this kind of numbing of emotional empathy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's how this book works so well.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's because it ramped it up into, goes in directions that you're not expecting, or even if you are expecting, it's like,
or are expecting it halfway through, but it's still...
It tells you what's going to happen halfway through.
Yeah.
It even says it again.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And so also, what part of this book is also the way that we have reality, or the things that actually happened, and the way that the people back on Earth are treating it. And I thought that was just the most frustrating thing ever.
Yeah.
Because what it came down to was that they believed a foreign species that they didn't understand, they didn't know, they believed them more than their own person.
Yeah, again, that is that kind of thing. So I'm like, when someone tells you, believe them. It's like, exactly. That's what this book is. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on from that. Do you have anything else you want to say about this? Because I've pretty much got through all of my notes here.
Okay. Well, this is one thing I want to say.
Yeah.
I think it's a tricky book. I think it's a difficult book for me too.
That's why I think it's a must read. Because this is a book which you either bounce off of, find boring, or it will make you think about things and will... Yes. It's a different approach to what science fiction can be and what science fiction allows you to do.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's exploring...
This book is impossible to do if it was just Jesuits going to Japan, or if it was just Jesuits going to North America.
Yeah.
This book, the only way it can work is being, you know, people going to a different planet.
Yeah, and it's using the science fiction hook, or the it's a science fiction story, but the themes and the stories and the ideas it transports makes you... First of all, I had massive emotional reactions to, in either way. Like, as I said, it's like a backwards and forwards of like going back really far and then stopping really heavily. And,
yeah, because that's actually a note that I had here, is that the series, there's like lots of vignettes of comedy and levity about them going into space and then working out how to have sex in zero G and all that kind of stuff. And all of that's contrasted with, meanwhile, back in Napoli, Emilio is really fucked up. God, you know what I mean? This is really heavy over here. And now, light breeziness. Yeah. Oh, we're going over here and we're exploring here and we're flying. We're flying our glider here and exploring here. And you're like, yay, this is all good. Good people doing fun things. And then it's sort of like, meanwhile, this guy's really fucked up back in Napoli. Yeah. You know?
It's really like a very interesting, difficult story. Journey. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah. In all kinds of directions. And so I'm glad I read it. I don't think I need to read it again.
No, I didn't. To be honest, I didn't
totally
need,
got
I didn't
what
need
I needed
to read
to get.
It again.
And I think it is interesting if you take it as also a device to observe yourself and your own reactions to things.
Yeah.
And then question and or just reflect on why...
We've pretty much only talked about how we reacted to this book.
Yeah.
And
because
I think
that's the strongest
that's
part.
That's the strong part of it. So... if you want to read a book which can be emotionally manipulative, even if you know going in that you're going to be emotionally manipulated, it's expert level manipulation of, you think you're getting one thing, it's actually another thing, it's actually another thing. And even knowing what it actually is, it still worked to me. So let me talk a little bit about the audiobook. I listened to the audiobook. It was already in my Audible library because I'd spent a credit on it before in, I guess, 2016. So it's narrated by David Kalachi. How would you pronounce that?
I can't read it from here. It's too small.
Yes, it is quite small text. Anyway, very good. However, my issue is that they would put... sound effect, or not sound effects, like vocal effects processing on parts. So Toko on a telephone.
Hello, I'm talking on a telephone.
And it was actually was difficult to understand what some of them were saying. And then talking on the radio, and then it talked over here, shouting, you know. So that's literally my only issue with it. Otherwise, yeah, pretty good at some of the accents, pretty, you know, because there's lots of different languages and accents.
Oh, yeah, so many
It was
things.
Otherwise very good. 15 hours and 19 minute audiobook. Yes, so I just wanted to mention that.
There's one thing I haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, what's that?
Which is the linguistics point. I'm really a fan of music and linguistics and these kind of exploration of language connected to culture and all these kind of things. And I was really excited about this aspect of Emilio being the linguist and knowing all the languages and
stuff. Well, it's not even that he knew all the languages. He just knew enough about
the
languages.
He knew how to learn them. Yeah.
So I just clicked more about the book.
A fun thing.
Just clicked more about the book.
Yeah.
And it comes up with all the settings and all the characters. So we're saying, what's the name of it?
Oh, yeah.
And looks, it was Sophia Mendes, Anna Edwards. You know, it has all the characters of the book right there.
Yeah.
Supari, Askama, Hlavinkthyri. Yes. Some alien names there.
Yes.
So, yes, Literary Awards, Arthur C. Clarke Award. It won the British Science Fiction Association Award for Best Novel in 1997. The John W. Campbell Memorial Award nominee. Oh, it was a nominee. Oh, okay. It won the James Tiptree Junior Award, and some others as well. So I just wanted to mention, yes, this is why it's in the must reads, because it's a multi award winning book. If you're interested in a book which won the James Tiptree Junior Award and the Arthur C. Clarke Award, they're kind of like different opposite ends of science fiction, and this one won both of those.
And look at the Goodreads rating; it's 4.14.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at some of our friend reviews.
Yeah,
Jonathan rated it 5. All of these people rated it 5. Jenny from Reading Envy, Dominic Ziven, Olga, Robert, lots and lots of 5 ones here. Kate, Ariana, Kevin Wilson rated it 3 stars. Okay. read this novel if you're mentally prepared for a deep dive into the psyche of Catholicism. Ryan rated it 4 stars. Don't know which Ryan's. Some Ryan. Victor 4. Yeah, lots of 4 stars as well. So based off the back of those, what rating are you going to give it? Because this is the rating that's going to be that our joint rating in this latest review is that I've reviewed this before, didn't listen back to the previous podcast again.
What was your previous rating?
I gave it 5 stars. This is why it made it onto the list of must reads, is because it was a book that I gave 5 stars to. I gave the second book in the series 3 stars, and I remember literally nothing about it. So I, that's why the second book in the series is never making the must reads, because I remember nothing about it. But the it is foreshadowed. The follow up book, it doesn't come out of nowhere. They pretty much say, "Oh, this person," you know, they're talking about this guy who went over to a Jesuit priest who went over to North America. Mm-hmm. And then we came back all injured and sort of like, and now I'm going to go back there. And it kind of says, I mean, again, I don't remember anything about the second book, but I kind of know what's going to happen in the second book, probably based on all the foreshadowing in this book. So it's quite funny. And they say at the end, hey, we're doing another mission. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
A rating.
I find it's really, really hard to rate this book.
You can also rate it on, this on a meta level as well. In other words, how much you like it? You can't say how much you enjoyed reading it if it's a horror book and it made you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of go to like, how much did you enjoy having had an experience which made you uncomfortable and that was difficult, knowing you were getting into a book which is meant to be challenging in that way, or maybe not knowing that, but it doing anyway.
I was impressed by the emotional and mainly by the emotional challenge that this book gave me.
Yeah.
I was also, in many places, heavily disappointed by the opportunities completely missed by this ramping backs and forwards
but
and once, chopping.
If you do that ramping up and contrast, there isn't time to have long, 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 long discussions about like the music or the ecology or the anthropology that you actually wanted. I'm just saying.
I think some of the pacing of this book is just bit faulty.
Okay. I think the pacing does what it's trying to do
it's
perfectly.
Very unique, definitely.
But it does skip over some stuff, which I was like, hey, wait a second. Yeah. I thought, that
Where's
kind of,
this bit? I really wanted to
Why
learn
do we
more
skip
about
away
it,
and not have it from the point of view of the people taking part? Like, these people were viewpoint characters here, and then the most important things...
ignored.
The most important things that happen to them, we don't get from their viewpoint. Yes. We get from somebody else's viewpoint in
Who
the past.
Who wasn't even there.
But that's the most effective way of actually telling the story of Emilio Sandoz, which is actually what the book is, like you say, that is actually what the book is about. It reminds me of that, the book, what was it? The one where they're like, oh, it's about some people doing Shakespeare plays in the post-apocalypse. And I was like, no, it isn't. Believe what the blurb says. It's actually Station 11, what is it? It's actually about a washed up actor who died on the day of the pandemic. That's actually what the book is about. So believe the blurb that is actually about that, and then you won't be disappointed going into it.
Yeah.
So, yes. Anyway, your rating is, don't think too hard. Just say something off the top of my head, off the top of your head, just so I can respond to it in some way. Great.
Yeah, it's really difficult because I don't want to not disappoint the book, but I mean, you know what
Give
I mean.
Give it a rating.
Okay. 4.75 stars.
Oh, you're going... Okay, the way that you're talking about it was like you don't want to do it down. I thought you were going to give it 3.5 stars, way you were talking about
that. In my head, it was between 4.5 and 5. Because...
Well, let's just give it 4.5 stars. That can be our combined rating.
What are you giving it?
Well, it was based on what you were doing, like what you were saying. For me, this second read-through is a 4-star reading experience, but that doesn't negate my first time reading experience is a 5-star reading experience.
Yeah.
My second reading experience is a 4-star. And again, I'm never reading this book again. I never need to do that too.
Yeah.
Oh, I say that, maybe in 20 years time. So let's give it 4.5 stars. We can average it out, average out your average with my average reading of the two experiences.
Okay, I can live with that.
4.5 stars. Are you happy?
Yeah.
All right. So next up, the next book that we review is, well, I wasn't sure if I was going to do all of these, but because I reread Roadside Picnic to see if that was going to be added in to the must read. So, and The Time Machine, let's put The Time Machine review on the back burner because I don't have a huge amount to say about that because I've read it before, talked about it before.
Yeah.
I've got some stuff to talk about with Starship Troopers. Let's do Starship Troopers next.
All right.
Because that's kind of something a bit more meaty. Another meaty thing to get in.
Another meaty thing.
Well, Roadside Picnic, I've got some meaty things to say about that too.
Okay.
Yes. Let's wrap it up there.
Right.
If you're my friend on Goodreads, I can see what you thought about The Sparrow. Thank you very much to everyone who's rated and reviewed the book. Well, it's a popular book.
Yeah.
It's a 20, 30, almost 30 year old book with lots of time for people to read it. And also go over to the SFBRP Goodreads, the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads respond to this episode in the episode feedback. No, actually, respond to this. There's actually a thread called the SFBRP Must Reads List. So that's a good place to discuss this book.
Do you think it should be on it?
Yeah. Is this on your SFBRP Must Reads? If you were going to put together a list of the 60 best science fiction books that were, which are still recommendable today, is this on the list?
Yeah.
So, go do that. Email me, luke@juggler.net. You can follow me on Instagram and Mastodon. You can find me there. There's links around. Juliana too.
Yeah.
That's it from us. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.